Mark Peterson, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Laborers for Neighbors, the show about work and laborers and how our work and laborers in various ways bless the community, bless our neighbors, bless our friends, bless our enemies. That's the weird thing, is that we're trying to bless anyone and everyone, and that's a good thing about people. And you, I have found, you are the president of the American Literacy Council, correct?
That is correct.
But your training, well, you have some linguistics training, but your main work, 9 to 5, is what?
I am a climate scientist.
Climate?
Actually, all my linguistics is informal, just as a hobby. So I have a undergraduate degree in engineering and a master's degree in atmosphere ocean science and a PhD in applied math. I'm a scientist at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and I write big computer programs that are very much like weather prediction programs, but they are for the global ocean.
Mm.
So you can imagine if you take the global ocean and you chop it into little pieces, and you have the computer predict from time step to time step the temperature and salinity and currents, that you can predict ocean currents the same way you can predict the weather. But then you use that for climate, investigating the climate and ocean currents and climate change.
I am on the East Coast. You're in New Mexico. Where were you born and raised?
Omaha, Nebraska. I'm a Midwesterner through and through. Both of my parents grew up on farms. My dad moved to the big city to be an accountant.
If I were to hold a gun to your head and say, who was your work hero growing up, one or two, who were your main work heroes growing up?
My work heroes? I mean, my parents were really good role models. Both of them have exceptional work ethics.
Mm.
And, you know, there's an old saying, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. And my parents are still doing well. My mom just turned 80. And they say the funniest things. Like my mother said just last week, well, on Sunday, we sleep in. And I said, oh, come on, what time do you wake up? And she said, 7. On Sunday, we wake up at 7. That's sleeping in.
Come on, folks. How about 7:30? Give me a 7:45. They would be oversleeping, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And I have to admit, I didn't grow up on a farm, but I have that same sort of work ethic, and I can thank my parents for that.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about what time I got up, but I will say this. You have on a Grand Canyon t-shirt partly because you live in the, you know, how many miles away from Grand Canyon do you live?
It's a 7-hour drive, but we try and go there every couple of years. I'm a trail runner. I have 5 children, and my oldest 2 are now in college. And they were in cross country, and they're also big trail runners. And it's the most wonderful thing to spend time with your teenage children running. I'm quite thankful that I'm in good shape and healthy, and I can do that. And just in July, with COVID and all, we ran the Grand Canyon, which means that you wake up at 3:30, you start in the dark, you run down all the way to the Colorado River, and then you kind of walk and jog back up. And boy, that was a really good time.
How many miles?
By the end of the day, it was 23, I think.
Mm.
But we were walking. We kept walking at the end of the day at the top.
How many miles is a marathon?
26.
So you almost did a marathon.
Yeah, but you have to think about the altitude change as well. So I think it's, 3,000 feet elevation gain, something like that.
You're talking to the anti runner. If I'm not hitting a ball or throwing a ball or catching a ball, I'm not sure what the point of running is. I ran cross country in middle school as a 9th grader, and I fought tooth and nail to never come in last. And there was only once I came in last. Here's my little thing for the day, and you can see it if I do close up. It's Atlanta Braves. See, I'm a baseball guy. You can see it. This my dad passed away several years ago. Never got the chance to wear this tie, and my mom gave it to me a month ago and said, it's yours. And today I'm wearing it for the first time. Go Braves. Right. You're a climatologist and a climate scientist. And so you're very smart and a hard worker. And so you bless many and many and millions, but you're also blessing folks with your side job, which is President American Literacy Council. I have been with the American Literacy Council since the late 80s. It's spelling reform. We were trying to change and simplify English spelling. Mad, clad, had, sad, and bad are fine, but when you throw in plaid, then you have a malcontent situation. How did you find out about the American Literacy Council years ago?
So it must have been 15 years ago. I was just, you know, browsing around the web, and I saw the most fascinating thing. It was just on Wikipedia, and there's Wikipedia articles that describe the different spelling reform systems, and ours is on there. You can look it up. I thought it was just the most beautiful, elegant solution to something that children spend a lot of time learning for really no good reason. People seem to think that our spelling system is God-given, but it's not. It's human-made, and we could change it. But the trouble is that the people who make the decisions about things like this have already bought into the system, right? We've already spent our 5 or 10 years learning how to read and learning how to spell. And so, you know, if all the five-year-olds in the English-speaking world had to vote, I'm sure that we would know what they would vote for. And the amount of mental energy that is spent on learning how to write and learning how to spell is just an unfortunate waste. And what really got me going is that I have five children, and the three younger ones are adopted. We adopted them from the foster care system, so we were foster parents in New Mexico for several years, and then we have these three our forever children, and they are now ages 11, coincidentally, another 11. I have two 11-year-old boys and a 14-year-old girl, and they, like many children who go through foster care, you know, they have histories and they struggle to learn. And so, you know, a lot of kids, learning how to spell is an inconvenience. It's an annoyance. But by the time you're in fourth or fifth grade, you can read most things. By the time you're in high school, you can write most things, right? For kids that are, I mean, kind of in, even in the bottom half academically, but definitely in the bottom third, it's a struggle. And it's just over and over and over again. And I see it, and I really sympathize with them. And you think, man, why are they spending so long in their life trying to read something that doesn't have to be this way? If we had somehow the mental organization and stamina as a society to see it through.
Right.
And there's been people in the past who, you know, Webster and Theodore Roosevelt and many big names who agreed with this and tried to do something about it. But unlike French and some other languages, there's no organizing board for English spelling, right? There's nobody in charge of it, is kind of the funny thing about spelling. And so that was my motivation. And besides, it kind of fits into, I have an overall interest in how human designed systems work. And there's so many human designed systems where the needs of the system change over the years, and it's too hard to change the whole system from the beginning. And so, you know, you kind of add a pipe with an elbow here and another pipe with an elbow there, and before you know it, you have a big mess. As a computer programmer, I see this all the time, right? Because you write a big computer program for something, and before you know it, you have 10,000 lines of code. And then you want to do something else, which wasn't the same as the first purpose. And you're not going to write that 10,000 lines of code again. So you think, how can I change this? Mm-hmm. How can I tweak it just a little bit so that it still works? But then after you do that 10 or 20 times, you know, you kind of have a five-headed monster, which is what I feel like the spelling system has become. And it's really unfortunate for all of the kids who have to go through that.
You and I are experiencing from a distance the Spelling Congress in Britain, in England. In London, they have the English Spelling Society, and between our organization and their organization, especially their organization, they have started this Spelling Congress, English Spelling Congress. And 2 years ago, they invited various organizations, various individuals to submit spelling reform plans, proposals. Six were chosen, and I saw it a month ago that ours, of course, is one of them, our sound spell system. In your estimation, why should someone, I think the voting will start in a month or so, 2 or 3 months, maybe?
I have to check.
And why is sound spell, in your opinion, the best system and people should vote for that? Because it's open to the public, the voting.
Right. So SoundSpell has a long history that goes back to, actually Dewey, the son of the Dewey Decimal guy.
Godfrey Dewey.
Gottfried, thank you, and wrote a book in, I think, the 40s. And then Ron Thaler and Liese wrote this 1989 dictionary, which was a lot of effort. And it's just a beautiful system. I mean, the subtitle is written as it sounds as it's written. And, you know, people talk about kindergarten spelling. And if you write things the way they're spelled for the most part, then that's what you get. And there's countries like Finland and South Korea where children are taught the spelling as a system. And then there's no spelling tests.
Mm.
You just learn the system, and then all of a sudden you can read everything. And I would say that the sound spell system is the closest thing that you could design to that, where once you know the rules, you know how to spell once and for all, period. No spelling tests. And as you learn new words, everything makes sense.
Mm.
And that's why I think that one is the best. And of course, linguistics is complicated. There's a lot of details and alternatives, because it is a human design system to convert sound into symbols. But it's very straightforward, and it has very little change between our current spelling system. And so everything makes sense for current spellers. So in fact, my daughter, Katie, did a little science fair project with my encouragement where she took it was some passages from Little Women, the book, and it was in sound spell, and she would interview both children and adults. She would just put it in front of them, and she would record how many mistakes they made.
Wow.
And you don't even need to explain it to anyone, hardly, but she did make a little 5-minute video, and people can read it without any training.
Right.
And so it's completely natural. And almost effortless, and you could have two spelling systems available to people during a transition. But I mean, right now we're just trying to agree on one spelling system, so there's a kind of an official alternative to modern spelling.
Mark, you and I were separated at birth regarding our initial love of our affection, our amazement at the system. I was out of college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And as soon as I read about this dictionary that had just been published, I said, I know what I want to do with my life. And I know what I, whether they hire me or not, I want to be involved in this. Mark, you and I will continue our chat, and good luck with your running the American Literacy Council. They need it. We need it. The English-speaking world needs your cunning. And thank you for manning up and being on the Labors for Neighbors show. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right. Great to talk to you.
Bye.